Hello, everybody. Phil Kaplan, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Phil.
Good. The word is good, but it doesn't sound that good. Dr. Pompa, are you here?
I am.
Hey, Dr. Pompa, I love you. I love you every day, and I love you for introducing me to the people I'm about to meet. So thank you for that.
Yeah, well, this is the voice of Phil Kaplan. You can tell he just has a radio voice, right? I mean, he did have, like, the number one national fitness radio show around the country. I don't know if it was the information, Phil, that you were teaching or just that voice, but that is the perfect radio voice. And considering
well, they say I have
a
face for
radio.
Show,
I'm going to have to deepen my voice. But anyways, Phil Kaplan, I said to some of you when I had a conversation with you that this man has changed my life more than anybody in my professional career. And that's the truth. You know, Phil, you've had an amazing influence on me. And I remember going to Florida, and I had the pleasure of speaking to your Be Better group down there, your fitness.
Yep.
And I tell you, you know, unprovoked, every one of them told me testimony of how you changed their life. And those people absolutely loved and adored you. And I was so honored even to speak in front of that group. And but what I had learned at that day, that you really have impacted those people's lives. And then you went on to impact my life from there. When people always ask me where I learned a lot of my closing strategy, it was from you, Phil. And matter of fact, Phil, oftentimes he watches me and things that I just do. He says, this is what you do, Dr. Pompa, and he coaches. He's been just an amazing help to our doctors in our Platinum program with their closing. Because although I'm good at that, I was never able really to teach it that well. And so much of it I sharpened because of what Phil taught me. But, you know, Phil has been a blessing to our Platinum doctors, and he's definitely been a blessing in my life. And I always love to tell the stories about how Phil, because he is an icon in the, well, I don't know. I want to say the fitness industry, but you know, Phil, I love telling this story, then I'm going to turn it over to you. But I read Muscle and Fitness years and years ago. I remember 15 years old to whatever age, and I was learning about nutrition at that age because I had to make weight for wrestling, and I just wasn't going to do it the wrong way. And I grabbed Muscle and Fitness, and I just started reading about, you know, fitness and everything and educating myself in this area right there. That's where my education began. And years later, I found out that it was Phil Kaplan that was writing those articles, most of those articles, not just for Muscle and Fitness, but Flex. Him and Joe Weider were great friends. And so Phil would write most of those articles for Joe. And, you know, and anyways, looking back, I think that's really funny because a lot of my nutrition education started with Phil Kaplan. You know, and Phil, you've had a massive influence on our business. You've had a massive influence on, you know, everything that we do in our professional career.
You know, and, you know, Dr. Pompa, it was meant to be. It's one of those things that was just destined to happen, and I'm just really thrilled that we've aligned so much because we come from the same heart, and we just took two different roads to get here.
It's true. You know, we always say that the fitness chiropractors and the fitness people are just like they're the same person. They really are. They both hate closing. They both have hearts of gold and try to give it all away. I mean, it's been, you know, it's the same mindset. You know, when Phil came into our Platinum group, I mean, he really was instrumental in changing the mindset, changing the way that our doctors think. And ultimately, that changed their practice. And so when he said he wanted to do a Be Better group with chiropractors, man, I said, you know, what's taken so long? Because it is mindset, you know, that changes people's business. You know, I can see someone's mindset, and I can see their future. You know, no
so
doubt.
With that, that's
with
exactly
that,
what we're going to do today. We're going to change your mindset. I'm telling you in advance, we're going to change your mindset. And I'm going to introduce you to three characters today, the EEM, the PFC, the RAS. You don't have to write those down. But by the end of this call, you'll know what they are. Also, by the end of this call, you'll say, why did he teach us that? And here's my promise to you. Every call will stack upon the previous one. So at first, you're going to have some question marks. Why is that even relevant? But as you move forward, you're going to see how this all comes together. So we're going to talk quite a bit about mindset. But I want to start by asking you a couple of questions. And let me answer this verbally. Just somebody step up and answer this question. How important is willpower? And I know, you know, you want to qualify, you know, what do you mean in terms of what? Just in terms of you working with people to change their life, how important is willpower? How important is it that they actually have willpower? Who can answer that?
I would say very important.
Okay, very important. And that's the answer I expected, but I'm not going to let you off the hook with that because now, who said very important?
Sandy.
Okay, so Sandy, right now spotlight's on you because you started talking. Now, I'll tell you this. Normally, the first person to speak up has the best outcome at the end of 8 months. So congratulations. I'm really glad you did that. But now, you said very. Why? Why is willpower important?
Because if you don't want it bad enough and you don't have your focus, then you can get wayside and next thing you know, time has gone by, you've not reached what you wanted to reach and not done what you wanted to do.
Okay, if you don't want it bad enough, is it possible to want it bad enough and not have willpower?
Yes.
So here's a question, and Sandy, if you can answer that, great, and if not, you know, toss it to somebody else. What is willpower?
Oh, willpower is just a burning desire to go forward.
Okay, hold on to that because we're going to talk about willpower a little bit later, okay? Now I have a second question that I'd like to ask, and this one, nobody has to answer me out loud. I just want you to write down the answer, and the answer will be one word. It'll be yes or it'll be no, okay? Now again, I don't want you to overthink it. So here's the question. Are you receiving what you deserve? I know where many of you want to go. You want to go in my career? You mean in my life? What do you mean, financially? I'm just asking you a simple question. I want you to trust your gut to answer based on your present belief. Are you receiving what you deserve? And all I want you to do is just say, got it, after you wrote down an answer. Either yes or no. I'm not going to ask you to reveal it. I just want you to write it down. We may or may not come back to it. But just let me know when you have something on a sheet of paper.
Got it.
Okay. This is about the 11th or 12th group that I've started into an 8-month process of betterment. And while the curriculum is exactly the same every time we go through it, it's always different. Because I know what we're going to cover on each call. I know I'm going to talk about the RAS, the PFC, and the EEM. I know we're going to talk about mindset today. I know we're going to talk a little bit about willpower. I know that. But each group takes on a life of its own as a result of the people and the personalities participating. So as we go through this program, you're going to be asked to participate. Now, I want you to do that now, but I don't want to waste a minute of time. I got a lot that I want to share with you. I'd like to meet all of you, but rather than taking the time to just go around and everybody introduce himself, I'm just going to ask what's your name and have you answer all at the same time. Okay, what's your name?
Aaron. Brad. Mike.
Alyssa. Paul. Sandy.
Yeah, nice to meet all of you. I did get Sandy. Everyone else sounded like a blur to me. In a minute, I'm going to ask you to hit *6. Not yet. Don't do anything yet. But I'm going to ask you to hit *6. If any time on this call or any call you want to speak, I want you to. If I say something that makes you kind of raises the hair on the back of your neck and you go, I can't let him get away with that, I want you to just step in and go, Phil, I don't like what you just said. If I ask a question and you want to answer it, I want you to answer it. If I ask a question and you have the answer, but you don't feel like answering it, I want you to answer it. So you're going to use that *6 very much like a toggle switch. So when you're not talking, you're going to be muted. But when you are talking, you're going to unmute, and then you'll mute again. Okay? So a very simple rule. If you want to speak at any time, remember this. I'm not only inviting you, I'm encouraging you to. So use that *6. I want you to use it to unmute any time you have a thought that you want to share. Now, while I do encourage you to participate, and I want to get to know all 15 people in this group personally, it's important that you realize that you're a part of a group. And there's always, and I know that person is here, I don't know who it is yet, but there's always the overly vocal person who is extremely passionate and wants to share everything. Everything I say, they want to say something. And they have stories to tell. And if that's you, I encourage you to speak, but know in advance. I will invite you to speak, and I will tell you when it's time to stop. Now, there's also in every group the person who thinks of answers to questions I'm asked, but never wants to say anything because they're afraid to say something stupid. So they kind of wait, they hesitate, and they just, when somebody else speaks up, they go, oh, missed my chance. If you're that person, change it. I want you to force it. It will play a vital role in your development. I can tell you the names of some of the people who've gone through Be Better in the past who were that person. They didn't want to participate. And they were pushed to, and it was uncomfortable for them. But if I told you with everyone where they are now, I'm telling you that was a vital piece of getting them to succeed. So I want you to participate. With that said, everybody hit star six. Now, this is a clever little test that I've learned. I'm going to count to three, and then everyone here, and please do it, call out a random letter of the alphabet, and that way we'll see if you're muted, okay? One, two, three. Beautiful. I didn't hear any of you. Fantastic. You all did it. You learned the star six. I'm very proud of you. Now, I know that we are all in fields where we perpetuate and witness change, and we perpetuate and witness transformation. And I also know there's nothing better. Man, when somebody comes and says, thank you, you changed my life, and they give you the hug, and they get a little teary-eyed, that's the greatest, isn't it? And that's why this project is so compelling to me, because previous participants have achieved outcomes beyond anything they ever expected. Many becoming true entrepreneurs, they were reluctant entrepreneurs. They were like, well, if I'm going to really do what I want to do, I'm going to have to start my own business. But they ultimately become true entrepreneurs, reaching far beyond any limits they had lived with prior. All of them bonded by a commitment to earn only and abundantly by bettering the lives of others. And I think you like that. The concept here is we should earn, we should achieve abundance, but we should only do it in a way where we earn by bettering another life. So with all of that said, I welcome you. Now, everybody's muted, so I will proceed as if I'm talking to myself, but I'm really talking to you, so remember, unmute any time that you want to jump in. We have a group of health professionals. And not just health professionals, but what I would call altruistic health professionals. Altruistic. They care. They come from their heart. They want to see good. They want to initiate good. And that's a thread that runs through everyone who has ever been a part of Be Better. They all, above all, want to help people. And in that, many, if not most of them, unintentionally limit what they receive. So I asked you a question to start. I said, are you receiving what you deserve? And I'm hoping that you said no. I'm hoping that you said no because you believe you deserve more. I'm hoping. Now, if you said, yes, I'm receiving everything I deserve, I want you to rethink that, or I really want you to rethink being in this group, because really, if you're getting everything, then there's no real hunger or desire for betterment. So the right answer was no. Now, if your honest answer is yes, as I said, just kind of rethink it. Are you receiving what you deserve? And if you are, great, but maybe that means you need to do more. The word deserve comes from the Latin of for to be of service. So when we talk about this concept of earning only by bettering somebody else's life, that's a wonderful way to approach it, is if you are of service enough and at a high enough level, then you deserve a nice reward. So everybody here is bound by that thread. They give to give. They give because giving makes them feel good. And that's nice. That's very, very nice. But when people give to give and only give to give, it leaves them in a state of want. And while they get fulfillment from hearing thank yous, it's almost like the drug that in the moment makes them feel okay. So I'm just, thank you. And you go, it's all worth it. They fall short in any personal goals that their heart wants for. Now, this is important to understand. Because if you're going, no, I don't need that much. I really don't. I mean, I don't need nice cars. I see other people, you know, and they have to have a 15,000 square foot home. I don't need that. I don't need to drive a Ferrari. I'm good. As long as I'm helping people, I'm good. I'm not going to tell anybody here what car you need or what house you need, but sometimes your ego shuts down the want of your heart. You're going to come to understand that at a greater level. So they get fulfillment from hearing thank yous, but they miss on the personal goals that their heart wants. Their mind doesn't quite know what the heart wants because the ego gets in the way. the ego may not have allowed the true wants of the heart to come to the surface. So in helping all of you to find new growth, I'm going to introduce you to three players in your life, your heart, your ego, and your mindset. And they may appear to be equal players, the heart, the ego, and the mindset. But there is a king. Of the three, there is a king, and that king is mindset. Mindset is the variable that determines what you do, where you go, and how far you take it. It is all about mindset. Now, for those who are chiropractors, this is not a program about new adjustment techniques. For those who are more involved in fitness, it isn't about functional exercise and dynamic movement patterns. It isn't about protocols. It isn't about new breakthroughs. This is a program about you, your heart, your ego, and your mind. And you've chosen to be here. So I congratulate you not only for joining the program and making a commitment to betterment in your own life, but more importantly, for committing to make things happen. I meet lots and lots and lots and lots of people who roll with the punches. You know what I mean by that? They find some odd sense of comfort in resigning themselves to be the victim. Oh, let me tell you what's happening with me. In the cases of your patients or clients or prospective patients who never become patients, you've heard this enough times where they blame something or somebody for the condition they're in. And they use words like but and can't to prevent them from moving forward. And it frustrates you. I know it frustrates you. But sometimes you got to hold up the mirror and say, is there any element in my life where I do that? In the case of your prospective patients, they'll blame rotten metabolisms, they'll blame genetics, they'll blame conditions or some circumstance that you don't understand. You don't understand. You didn't grow up this way. You don't understand. You don't live in this place. You don't understand. They tell themselves they cannot initiate change, so why bother? You meet those people. They frustrate you. You're related to some of them. Hey, what do I do to lose weight? Hey, how do I get my energy back? And you start to give them an answer, and they go, no, I can't do that. We got to change the way you eat. No, I can't do that. Why? And they'll give you 1,000 reasons why. I mean, it starts with one, but if you want more, they'll give you more. So I want you to realize they are creating their outcomes. Those people get really good at pointing fingers. His fault, her fault, their fault, it's the weather's fault. It's always something or somebody else's fault for their personal challenges and for their lack of achievement. That's the ego. More than anything else, this program is designed to change you from the mind outward. And that's why I said early on, you're not going to quite get the value of many of the things that I share, but when they become tangible, when you start to really experience change, you're going to get it. So we're starting from deep within. And it's an interesting thing to try to teach your mind brain to understand your mind brain. And that's really what we're doing here. We're trying to get your mind, your thought process, to recognize that you are creating it. I want to remove you from any association with that group of victims. I want you to change precisely in the way your true heart wants you to. And I really want you to get in touch with that concept. Because
so,
when
can
you
I have
say
a question
things,
for you?
Yeah, sure. Who is this?
Rick Dunlap.
Okay, Rick.
Do you see an address kind of the flip side of that, in a sense that somebody that's not stuck in victimhood but is stuck by, that totally acknowledges law of attraction, what comes in, but has the blocks within themselves and sees that and feels it? You know, it's not the externals, it's the internals that are really holding me back more than anything.
I will teach you guys to identify whatever it is that limits you. So I can promise you, if that's your reality, we'll get to it.
Okay, cool.
So this is more about, when I say working from the mind outward, we're going to understand the mechanisms first. What goes on inside your brain, inside your mind, that creates the state that you're living in now? So the loose answer to your question is yes, and I thank you for that. Okay?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
And I think I've said this, but I think it bears saying again, I don't believe that at the end of this call, you'll realize what a pivotal moment this is for you. You know, you kind of scratch your head a little bit. And, you know, at some level, I know you have to trust Dr. Papa. I mean, he brought me to you for a reason. So there's something good here. Now, if I do my job well, I will know at the end of today's call. I'll know. I delivered what I needed to deliver. I'll get a sense of, okay, kicked it off. They're all on their way. But you won't feel it, and that's good. Here's an interesting phenomenon that I would say you're guaranteed to experience. At the end of today's call, you will not feel as if you received the information you expected. You won't know how to acquire more clients. You won't know how to acquire more patients. You won't know how to better persuade people, and you won't know how to earn more money, but I'm okay with that. In fact, I'd be upset if you left this call feeling as if you got everything you need, because that would prove that you're stuck in your own bubble, one that you aren't willing to recognize or consider or access or enter or change. There are few obstacles as damaging as the imposition of internal limitations. What does that mean in plain English? Shutting yourself down, getting in your own way. And you see lots of people who do that, but most of you don't recognize the behaviors in yourself. Doesn't mean you're a problematic personality. It means you're human, living a human experience in a society that is completely whacked out in the 21st century. How do we make sense out of all of this? We just have to run better programs. So I've taken people through this Be Better curriculum at every imaginable level of income, affluence, and all of them identify their own limits, and all of them have breakthroughs. So at some point, this may be painful for some of you. We're not going into deep psychoanalysis, but at some point you're going to hold up the mirror and you're not going to like what you see for a moment, and then you're going to love the fact that you're learning how to change it. So while you may not know it, I know. You stay with me for 8 months, and you'll look back, and you go, man, I am so glad I started that program with you. We have a mix of people here. We have some from the East Coast. We have some from the West Coast. We have some from Middle America. And even though there are only 15, we've got a pretty good assortment. Everyone bound by a passion to help other people improve. Now we have to determine how, using that passion, you can help yourself to achieve a more powerful position. I want to say that again. We have to determine how, using that passion, the passion to help others improve, how we rely on that passion so that you can help yourself to achieve a more powerful position. And notice I didn't say, I'm going to get you there. I'm going to teach you to access the power to change your present. And I'm going to give you access to the power to change the fact that you love where you're going. Now, I use the word power a few times, and I know some of us cringe when we hear that. We go, no, I don't want power. And if I made a list of all of the traits, I said, which is important to you? Many would not have power near the top, because you think of power as Napoleonic, you know, as a great dictator. And they go, I don't want that. You know, I don't want that at all. I want to be liked. I don't want to be an evil dictator. I'm not asking you to be an evil dictator, but I'm asking you to access your power. Power is good. And I know altruists reject that at first. There are people who have used power for evil. There are people who continue to use power for evil, but that's their choice. So realize this, it's really good to possess power and have the choice as to how you're going to use it. And power, as we will discuss it, will tie in fully with your desires and most of all with your ethics. It is the power to steer. It is the power to move toward what you want to move toward. You're going to come to understand intimately a concept called creative tension. And creative tension is the power that moves you toward where you want to be. And we will explore that in great depth in the months to come. But it is the power that you will demonstrate for yourself that will change. You're going to learn how to build your business strategically. And for those of you who feel like you're working really hard, I'm going to make you a promise right now. If you follow what I share with you, the process will soon feel effortless. Not at the beginning, because change is always a stretch and you feel that stretch. But if you do what I'm going to suggest that you do, you will learn to build your business strategically and the process will feel effortless. But we have to begin at the core, the driving force, and I said that is mindset. So right now, I'm going to ask one person to unmute and share a goal, an aspiration, anything in your life or career that you feel needs development. Just something that answers the question, what do you want? Who can do that? Just unmute *6 and just give us a sense of anything.
Is Rick
you're looking
again?
Ahead going, here's what I'd want. Who is that?
Rick Dunlap again.
Okay.
Basically to establish a viable and profitable functional medicine program.
Okay. Now, that's the kind of language, and it's good language, that's the kind of language we use when we write down goals in a goal-setting workshop, right? But what if we're just buddies? What if we're just pals? And I go, hey, Rick, you know what? Let's take a look at this future. You can create anything you want. What do you want? How does that come through?
You know what?
Just
honestly, to answer that perfectly is like, I want to have fulfillment in my day.
Okay, that's a good start. It's a really good start. Now, you want fulfillment in your day, but you really want fulfillment in every day, right?
Yes, I guess I would have to say my work day, yes.
Okay. And would you want fulfillment in your personal life as well?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's fair to say you want fulfillment. Give me one thing that you'll be able to say, now I feel fulfilled. And I'm not suggesting one thing will make you feel ultimately fulfilled, but one thing that is measurable, that when Rick gets that thing or achieves whatever it is, we're going to be able to look at it and go, ah, look at that, you feel fulfilled right now, don't you? Yep. What is that one thing?
Patient success.
What is it?
Patient success. In other words, seeing the patients achieve their goals and the plan that I set up for them.
Okay. And, guys, I appreciate everybody here listening, and I appreciate Rick putting himself out, because I want you to hear how vague our language is until we're prompted. So when I talk about what your heart truly wants, when you give answers like fulfillment, it's a good answer. It's a real answer. What will give you fulfillment? Patient success. These are such vague terms. And I'm almost thinking of, if you could just wish for something and it would manifest, can you be more specific? Is there a patient? Is there a type of patient? Is there something specific you'd like to see happen so you know they achieved success? Or is it something outside of that?
You know, I'd have to say I can't say it'd be a specific patient or situation. It's just feeling like I have purpose and what I'm doing has meaning. I mean, everything else would come secondary to that, but it's just that I know when I'm doing something, whether it's giving an adjustment, whether it's, a functional medicine patient, it just, the core comes down to, like, I just feel like I have purpose and I'm doing something purposeful.
Okay. And by the way, this is the way it goes, so I don't want you to feel like I'm picking on you. You're giving very good answers. But it's my job to kind of dig and pry a little bit and just start to reveal some things about our language, because, Rick, you represent everybody on this call right now.
Yeah, and listen, I appreciate the digging and prodding. I need it.
If we were to put a light, a green light, over your head, and it just traveled with you everywhere you went, but it never lit up, until the moment where you said, in this moment I have purpose, in this moment I feel fulfilled, can you give me the moment, the specific that might happen? I don't care if you create an imaginary character, a patient you haven't met yet, but is there something? Like, I'll share something with you quickly, because I am not materialistic. I'm not. And that doesn't mean I don't appreciate nice things, but I don't delude myself into thinking that nice things will make me happy. And I know there are many people who live that way, and I don't condemn them for it. But what I've learned to do, because I come from the place that I'm sharing with you, where, you know, you're an altruist, and you're almost like the starving artist. Like, there's some virtue in the fact that you're not doing it for selfish reasons. And then you realize all your friends are driving nicer cars, and all your friends have better homes, and go out to nicer dinners, and go on vacations, and you go, I want some of that. So the trick is to recognize that. So I always try to associate milestones with achievement. So if for every nickel I make, I've helped another person, then I feel good. So if I get enough nickels in my bank account to buy a grand piano, and in my mind I created the room that the grand piano would be in, then there's a moment that I feel fulfilled. And understand, it's not because of the piano. It's the milestone. It's the, I got what I want because I helped enough people. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not that the grand piano itself is important. I gave it importance because it represented lives that I've touched. So can you come up with that green light moment? Because for me, it was the day they brought the grand piano into my house. It was like, this is what I pictured in my mind, and bam, here it is. Is there anything like that for you? And again, it doesn't have to be a material thing. I gave you a material example, but it could be anything where we can go, yes, that's the moment. That's what I'm looking for. That makes me feel fulfilled.
Just personal feeling stuff is, I just think flashback is, when I got my dog. And I know it sounds kind of crazy, but it's like
those are just a really good feeling of fulfillment and joy and happiness at that moment.
Okay. We could explore a lot with you. For the sake of time, we're going to move forward, but I've taken notes on everything you've said, and by the way, the call is being recorded. So we're going to use everything that you've shared, and I'm promising you, as I said, some of this is going to feel like a stretch, but ultimately, you're going to open up to some things that you might not even recognize now. Fair?
Fair enough.
Okay, thank you. So hit star six. I'd ask somebody else if you could unmute, having kind of listened to that. Did anybody kind of feel that, where it was just no matter what I asked them, there was this vague, general, I just want to feel good, I just want to feel fulfilled. Anybody who heard that and can give me a something, a milestone, a moment, a thing that your heart wants?
This is Alyssa.
Hello, Alyssa.
Hey. I want to be debt-free in the next 2 years.
Okay. Now, let me tell you, when I do these programs,
Yep.
This all changes. When we get into month 4, 5, 6, I'm telling you, you guys will be speaking differently because you'll be thinking differently. I promise you that. I'm going to make you many promises. I'm going to live by every single one I make. So when I ask the question, what do you want, it always begins with two different things. One is people tell me something vague, something not measurable. I want to be happy. I want to feel better about my work. You know, that, I always get that. And then the next thing I get is people tell me what they don't want. So you saying I want to be debt-free is really saying I don't want to have debt. You're looking at something in your life you don't like and you want it to go away, and that's good. But I'm looking at your heart now. I'm saying, what does Alyssa's heart really want? Because your heart's not going, just if only I could be out of debt, I'll be so happy. Your heart looks forward and goes, I would love to have. And that's why people fall in love and they get married and they have families, because their heart wants to go there. But when it comes to achievement for the altruist, they block that. So I understand you want to be out of debt. But give me something else that's sort of a, let's look forward to this, achievement, acquirement, possession, relationship, something that is tangible that is not in your life right now.
Okay. I would like to be married within the next year. I want to create a practice that grosses $80,000 a month within the next 3 years. I want to participate.
Oh, by the way, it doesn't need to take 3 years, right? You won't be upset if it happens sooner, correct?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, good. Just making sure.
Yeah, I want to have a very active travel life and travel to Europe yearly.
Nice. Where would you go? Let's say you started now. Let's say we could project into the future and we're going to go, hey, time machine, we're going to take you to your first trip to Europe after the Be Better program. Where are you going?
Vienna.
Have you been?
Nope.
How will you feel when you actually land in Vienna, when you're watching out the window and you realize you're landing in Vienna? How will that feel?
Exciting.
Okay. Will you feel a sense of fulfillment?
Yeah.
Will you feel happiness?
Mm-hmm.
Will you feel gratitude?
Yes.
Where will the gratitude be directed? There's no right answer here, but
yeah,
you're saying,
yeah,
I'm thankful. What are you thankful for?
The life that I'm allowed to live.
Because you've done what?
I contribute to people.
Okay. Very good stuff. I appreciate that. I appreciate you sharing. And again, you'll see why all of this is relevant for all of you as we move forward. But listen, I want to ask you, did you feel a little bit of my frustration? We're going to come back to that word. In talking to Rick, in trying to kind of peel that open and just not getting it?
Yes.
So you understand the difference between what you just shared and what he didn't share, correct? Or the difference between what he shared and what you shared. Again, it's not a judgment. I just want you guys to see it. Is when she lands in Vienna, she will think back to this conversation and she will go, I don't believe it. This was what I imagined and here I am. So it's not a vague thing. It's not just travel to Europe, because how many times, how often, where are you going to go? You know, there has to be that moment where you go, hey, this is it. I'm living the dream. And it doesn't mean it stops there. From there, you might go, now I want to go to Australia. You know, you could always set more. But somewhere we got to get in touch with a true want that you can articulate, because my job is to help you get there. And if you just give me vague terms like fulfillment and happiness and health, I can't guarantee I'll get you there. It's almost like if somebody comes and goes, I want to be stronger. And you go, okay. And now they can bench press 5 pounds more. And you go, you're stronger. And they go, no, I didn't mean that. I meant I want to bench press 100 pounds more, right? So I want quantifiable. I want somebody to be able to say to me, I want to land in Vienna. And I know, I swear, I know this is hard. I don't want you guys to think I'm yelling at you. This is the process of unraveling the blockages. This is a process of connecting with this concept of creative tension that you will all come to love. So thank you to everybody who shared so far today, and those who haven't, you certainly will have a chance to. Let me ask somebody who hasn't spoken yet, and I'm going to tell you, I will not put you on the spot. I will not make you uncomfortable. I just have a question. So who's willing to introduce himself that hasn't spoken yet? And what I said, if you're the shy one who doesn't normally participate, do it.
Bob?
Bob?
Yeah.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Bob, do you think significance is a good word?
Yes, it can be. Yes.
It can be or it is. Like, are there times it isn't? If somebody said, Bob, you are significant, would that ever be a bad thing, or is that always a good thing?
No, that would be a good thing.
Significance is a good word, right? Significance is a good word.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is a yes or no question. Do you feel a sense of being significant every hour of every day?
No, I do not.
Can you identify one thing, tangible, conceptual, or otherwise, that has prevented you from getting there? And that's not to say you never feel significant, but really, we'd all love to feel significant every hour of every day. So if you're not feeling that, can you possibly identify anything that is at some level an obstacle?
Yeah.
You want to share what that is?
Not believing that I'm delivering this type of care that I want to deliver.
Okay, so it's not even the care you deliver, it's the belief.
Yes.
So even if, by some standard, you were delivering appropriate and satisfactory care, if you don't believe that you're delivering what you're capable of, you wouldn't feel significant, right?
Correct, yes.
There are two ways we can change this. Do you know what the two ways are?
Change my mindset.
Yeah, well, that's one. We can change what you do, or we can change your belief.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is change both. So thank you, Bob.
All right.
Mindset, emotion, and outcome are intrinsically connected. Mindset, emotion, and outcome. You cannot break them apart. And we want to learn to stimulate and access those positive emotions that make us feel good. Significance is a good one. Fulfilled is another good one. So we're looking for those. But right now, for the moment, I want you to go a different direction. I want you to tap into an emotion that we tend to dislike, one we usually want to avoid. I want you to tap into frustration. Or at a deeper level, anger. When you look at the world around you, I want you to pinpoint one thing, circumstance, that frustrates you, or at a deeper level, that angers you. Maybe it's the thing that keeps you from feeling significant all the time. I want you to think of one thing. I'm going to ask all of you to identify one thing that makes you feel frustrated, or if we take it deeper, frustration becomes anger. And I don't want you to feel any guilt in isolating something. It's a feeling that you have. So if you go, it's my next-door neighbor, but I don't want to admit that. Admit it. Because, again, it's not a judgment. It's a feeling that you're identifying. If it's the state of the medical field, if it's the drug companies, there's something that makes you feel frustrated. I want you to identify it. And what I'm asking you to do is not blame. I'm not asking you to say it's somebody else's fault or something else's fault. I just want you to recognize what in your belief system feels like a wrongdoing or an obstacle or an impingement or a hindrance or a paradigm that you don't like or a common belief that you feel needs to be changed or a standard marketing ploy that you feel is unethical. And while you think about it, allow me to make a key point that you're going to need to hold on to. Emotions serve you if you learn how to steer. Now, if you haven't written anything down yet, I want you to write that down. Emotions serve you if, and you can even underline that if, you learn how to steer. Meaning that emotions don't always serve you. Emotions can work against you unless you have this condition where you know how to steer, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. A part of truly harnessing power, a word I used earlier, is recognizing that although your emotions control and drive you, which you know they do, right? You've done some stupid things in your life. You know you have, and when you've done them, it was always a stupid emotional decision. But in the moment, emotionally, for some odd reason, it felt right. So we cannot deny that emotions control and drive us. So if we're going to truly harness power, then we need to recognize that and develop a supportive mindset that gives us the ability to manage our emotions so they work in our favor. It's almost as if you learn to shift gears, tapping into the emotion that you most need in a given moment. Let me call this one now. Boom, shift gears. Here it is. I have been through hundreds, maybe even over 1,000 at this point, different programs, you know, mindset programs, influence programs, all sorts of programs related to physicality and exercise and change and kinesiology, and you name it, I've been through it. And there are lots of programs where you're asked, as a participant, to think of puppies and rainbows. You know, Rick mentioned he likes his dog. It's a nice thing. People love their dog. So you're asked to think of puppies, rainbows, flowing streams, sunlight coming through the trees, nicey nice things that make you feel good. I happened to be in Forest Knoll, California, just north of San Francisco, and I stopped just driving by up a beautiful mountain at Spirit Rock Meditation Center. Found it fascinating, really. Not a place that I would stay for a very long time, but to me, fascinating. And there were people who stay there for years, literally. And that's what they do. They get to a place where they feel good. But really what they're doing is leaving the material world, at least momentarily. They're going somewhere else, inward. And it's probably a very good place to be because they're going inward into their mind. Now, I have my own opinions, some I'll share with you, but I'll always tell you when they're opinions and not facts, and this is an opinion. Personally, I think it's a good thing to leave here and go into your mind if you use it to improve your life or better the lives of others. But I think it almost becomes drug-like, where you can get addicted to that state of quiet. And I've seen a lot of that, where people really get so deep into this meditation, mindfulness. But you have to really ask, are they making a difference? Are they feeling significant, or are they just kind of erasing? And you can debate me on that again. It's just my opinion. So I've been to many of those sorts of lessons where you get to go to the nice place. And they frustrate me. They're nice in the moment, but they frustrate me because I leave there and I go, did I really learn how to change anybody's life for the better? And Oprah would certainly argue with me. She would say, oh, yes, of course. I said emotions serve you if you know how to steer. So if you know that, or at least for now believe that because I said it, please consider this. The emotions that we typically think of as negative can be the greatest fuel we have. The emotions we typically think we want to get rid of can be the greatest fuel source in moving toward those things and outcomes we most want for it. So right now, all hail the most important, greatest emotion for kicking off a program, frustration. There is an undeniable connection between the power of your frustration and the willingness that you choose to access in moving toward what you really want. Willingness, willpower, willingness. There's an undeniable connection between the power of your frustration and the willingness you choose in moving toward what you really want. And I just said four important words that I want you to stop and pay attention to every time I say them, what you really want. That, as I told you, is a hard vision to crystallize for most altruists, at least until they develop an adjusted mindset. They're so caught up in the mother Teresa syndrome, so connected to providing significance through providing and caring for, they shut down the connection with the wants of the heart. If I repeat this a few more times, I don't apologize for it because it's important for you to understand. The ego doesn't want you to feel pain. So it quiets those wants and it assures you it isn't your fault. It's the circumstance. Stop wanting that. Be happy with what you've got. I'm telling you, the way you break out of that is get frustrated. Frustration has power. It's uncomfortable. You don't want to be frustrated. So if you're in a state of frustration, and here's your choice, think of puppies and rainbows. That's one option. It certainly is. And it might get you out of frustration until you open your eyes, because then nothing has really changed. Or use that frustration as fuel to make a change. It's uncomfortable, but you need to be uncomfortable to really change. And unless you can crystallize what you want, which in week one, call one, very few people can do. Later, you'll all be able to. But unless you can crystallize what you want, not what I think you want, not what everybody else thinks you should want, but what your heart wants, it's hard to leverage the power of frustration. Much of our frustration comes from a loss of control, from a sense that we fail to own our own time, and we're burdened with have-tos. I have to do this today, I have to do that today, and this and that and that. We have long lists of have-tos. In a few weeks, I'm going to share with you my Max 10 system for time ownership. You're going to love it. Your life will change with that particular call, and your time will suddenly and forever feel like your own. But none of this works without the right programming, the right inner drive mechanism, the right mindset. So we have a lot to look forward to, but we have a few things to do right now. We are the same, but we are different. Can somebody speak to that statement in any way? We are the same, but we are different. It sounds contradictory, but I believe it to be a truth. Can anybody explain how that could be true? It sounds like a contradiction. You know, it's black, but it's white. That would be a contradiction. We're the same, but we're different. Why is that not a contradiction? Who can take a shot at it?
This is Alyssa.
Alyssa?
It's not a contradiction because while we all have varying different desires or hopes or dreams, we all have hopes and dreams. We all experience the human experience and seek things like fulfillment. And we're all different in what our experiences are and what those fulfillments might be.
Alyssa, you're a chiropractor, yes?
Yes.
Have you had anybody come in who has seven vertebrae?
In their entire spine?
Yes.
No.
Have you had anybody come in who had 37? 107? Have you met anybody who bends their leg from the middle of their thigh instead of the knee?
No.
Okay, I
no.
did have someone with seven vertebrae once, I'm just saying.
You did?
I
Was
did.
It a human?
Was
it a human?
I mean, an extra one. I'm sorry. An extra cervical vertebrae.
Okay. So let's
say
this.
And you could tell she had the longest neck and she had eight vertebrae. It's true.
I want to tell you this, and you may not know this, and I know you're far more studied in chiropractic than I am, but she was an alien. Just so you know, she didn't reveal herself to be one, but she came from another planet. I just want you to know that.
Your rats only have seven, right? So... You know, I literally said, well, you have more cervical vertebrae than a giraffe, and she almost dropped. But she actually already knew she had an extra one. She told me.
Okay, so let me go somewhere else. Have you met people who have three butt cheeks? Have you met people who have 6 feet? Have you met people who have four noses? No, because we are all the same, and we all have a heart, and we all have lungs, and we all have a respiratory system, we all have a digestive system, and we all have hormones. So we're all the same. But Alyssa, how are we different?
We express ourselves differently. We have different experiences. We want different things. We dress differently. We have different color hair, different size noses.
Right? Different likes and dislikes, different energy systems, different tastes in food, different sleep habits. We can go on and on and on. Different anger triggers. We're all very different. So we are the same, but we are different. So here's what I want to say to everybody here. You are the same. You are the same. You're the same because you have the heart of an altruist. You care. You want to help people. You want significance. You want fulfillment. You are all the same. There's nobody here who would say, I don't ever want to feel fulfilled. No matter what, I don't ever want to feel significant. I don't ever want to. We're all the same. We are all the same. However, every single one of us is unique. And this is a hard concept for many people to grasp, but I know you guys get it. Every single one of us is unique. So if I ask the question, what prompted you to become a health practitioner? Most of you would say, I want to help people. Most of you might even go further, tell me your own personal story and talk about your passion for helping others. So in that, we are the same. So if you're trying to market your business and you go, I am a health practitioner who cares about people, and you hang that sign outside, I don't know that that's going to be the greatest marketing. Maybe one or two people will come in because they're curious, but it's really not that compelling. But what if you put up a sign that said, I am the chiropractor that charges $1 and I only need to see you for 5 minutes? That would be unique, right? Now, I'm not asking any of you to do that, but I'm just saying you stand out. I don't want you to lie. I don't want you to make things up. But here's what I want you to start to realize. You are unique. You are like everyone else, but man, you are so different. Every single one of you has unique gifts and traits. Every single one of you. And if you don't recognize that, if you get caught up in the masses and you go, yeah, well, I'm just a chiropractor. I'm just a personal trainer. That's limiting. And until you really start to look at it, most people have no idea how unique they are. So as together we move through this Be Better project, you'll be asked to explore what traits you bring, what unique traits, what individual gifts, what individual talents, what individual abilities, experiences, what individual processes allow you to deem yourself unique. Some of you love to read, some of you don't. Some of you play the piano, some of you don't. Some of you play the piano and can only play classical music. Some people like to play Billy Joel. You all have unique traits, and you don't think of them as having any relevance to your career, but oh, they do. So as a beginning exercise to start to try to identify a little bit about your uniqueness and get in touch with this emotion, frustration. And by the way, frustration and anger are the same. It's just it's further along the spectrum. So if you get more and more and more and more frustrated, you wind up angry. So I'm going to give you two paragraphs that will serve as a preliminary step in beginning to identify each person's uniqueness. So I hope everybody here has a pen, or at the very least, a computer in front of you. And I want you to start with this sentence. Many health practitioners blank, and that disgusts me. Now, I don't want you to write many health practitioners blank. I want you to actually fill in the blank. So many health practitioners, and that disgusts me. And then the next sentence is going to be, I am different because nobody's being judged or scored on this test. This is simply getting you to think. So if you are like all other health practitioners, which you are, okay, but there's something that makes you different. So let's identify, what is that? Let's start. So many health practitioners, and that disgusts me. Now, if you're a personal trainer, you can say many personal trainers. If you're a chiropractor, you can fill in whatever you want, but we're looking to find your uniqueness and your frustration at the same time. Somebody, ideally somebody who hasn't spoken yet, when you've got something, just share it with us. Many health practitioners, and that disgusts me. I am different because is anybody able to fill in the blank? Now, if you are talking and I'm ignoring you, it's because you're muted. So star 6 to unmute.
Sandy?
Who is this?
Oh, Sandy?
Oh, Sandy. Hi, Sandy. Okay, go ahead.
So many health practitioners look for the easy answer, and that disgusts me. And I am different because I'm like a bulldog. I don't give up until I figure out what's going on.
Tell me about the level of disgust. Take that a little further. I mean, if you and I are just sitting somewhere and getting to know each other and talking, and you're really kind of tapping into the difference, and you're just really disgusted by what you see, tell me about that. Many health practitioners look for the easy answer. Tell me a little more about that.
Well, they don't actually get to the heart of it. They tend to give what they think will be a short-term answer, knowing that it's not going to help the patient or it may just help temporarily, but then if that doesn't help, they'll look a little further to see what else they can try.
Hmm. Is that ethical in your mind?
No.
Now, you're different. Go ahead.
Because my experience is, and I'm thinking of more of the MDs and DOs that we have, like if you go to a surgeon and ask them because you have chronic pain, the one thing they're going to tell you is, oh, you need surgery. And they don't look for any alternative means. They don't say, okay, why don't you try this before you do surgery or go to a chiropractor or go to a massage therapist or try acupuncture. They just know the one thing, and it's based, in my opinion, off of the mighty dollar, economics.
Could you earn your living that way if somebody gave you an opportunity to?
Yes.
Could you feel fulfilled?
No.
Could you feel significant?
Yes, I would feel significant.
So you understand why they do what they do, correct?
I do.
But still, it really disgusts you.
Yes.
Because you are, did you say a bulldog?
Yes, I see.
You go after it. You're relentless, right? You're not going to stop.
Exactly.
And you believe that's something that really separates you from, let's say, the pack, right?
I hope so.
Okay, good. Thank you for sharing that. Can somebody else? Anybody else? Just share what you came up with. I want to know something that disgusts you and why you're different. Many health practitioners blank, and that disgusts me. I am different because... If you couldn't come up with anything, then I want you to just say that. Just say, Phil, I couldn't come up with anything. If you're looking at what you wrote and you're just thinking, nah, this is dumb, then I want you to tell us. This is about change, so if you normally wouldn't, do it. As Dr. Pop would say, do a 180.
Bill, it's Bob.
Okay, Bob, what do you got?
Many health care professionals upset me because they forget the power that developed the human body, and they don't try to share that with their patients.
Okay, upset's not strong enough. I want it to disgust you. Does it disgust you?
Yes, it does disgust me, yes.
Okay, and you're different, why?
That's the one thing I try to get across to people, that healing comes from the inside, not from the outside.
And in your mind, most health practitioners don't do that, so you believe that makes you different, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you. I'm going to give you another one, and I'd like somebody else to answer. There are many health options available. One that I particularly find disheartening is, there are many health options available. One that I particularly find disheartening is, blank. There are many health options available. Now, by the way, I didn't say actual solutions, but there are many products and services, programs, protocols being offered up as options. So we acknowledge there are many options available. I want you to single out one that you particularly find disheartening, that it really gives you a sense of heaviness when you look at people who are just being scammed or fooled or falling for it. Who can answer that?
Lap band surgery.
Lap band surgery. Why is that so disheartening to you? I mean, they lose weight, right?
They do, but it's not teaching them anything. They're not...
Yeah, but they just wanted to lose weight. So why is that disheartening?
Because then the lap band, if it breaks, that's another toxic product in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're not going to change their life. If anything, they're just going to make it worse over time.
So, now complete this. Retaining me, meaning you, you'd be saying this, retaining me as a coach and guide is a better choice because?
Because I would teach you why your body is reacting the way its body is reacting and how to overcome the obstacles, not for today, but for the rest of your life.
Okay.
And
these are very good answers, very genuine answers, very sincere answers. Now, please don't take this personally, and I'm not directing this to a single person. I'm just directing it to what I've heard. Nobody gives a shit. Now, if that offends you, I don't apologize. I don't say it to offend you, but here's what I want you to know. Your honest heart is terrible marketing. The truth about your heart's want will compel nobody. Now, I know you believe it should because you think everybody needs to be educated. Everybody needs to understand the body. Everybody needs a detective to go deep and figure out what's wrong, but they don't think they need that. So here's something we have to learn in our business. We are not our business. We have to separate who we are from what we do. We've got to learn to market in a way that is magnetic, not lie, but not be so open with our true heart. Because I know those things are nice, and when you're in a group of altruists, they all nod their head. But if we created a marketing campaign based on what we heard here today, I'm telling you, it would fail miserably. Dr. Pompa, are you still here?
I am.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, gosh, totally. Absolutely. I was going to chime in and say amen to that, but I figured I didn't want to disrupt you.
So I want you to get frustrated. That should anger you. Your true heart does not get people to come take advantage of the services that you want to deliver. Man, that should make you mad. There are other people far less qualified than you, far less honest than you, far less ethical than you, who are making 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times the money you're making. It's wrong. I want you to get mad, because if you get mad enough, you'll change. You're not going to change who you are. I promise you that. I come from the same heart as you. We're not changing that. We're just changing the way we look at outcomes. And if a part of what makes you feel fulfilled is changing the lives of others for the better, you can't change their life unless they're willing to come to you. And marketing becomes a vital piece of this. So the altruist always has a hard time marketing, and that's why they hate it. I don't want you to hate it anymore. But a huge part of what will serve you in marketing is identifying what makes you unique. We're going to figure out how you should market. So when we learn from Dr. Pompa campaigns that work, great, because we're all the same. But within that, we have to find the uniqueness of you. What is it that you deliver? What is it that you bring? What is it that makes you feel fulfilled? And we marry those two. That's a beautiful marriage. Because now people start to recognize you for who you are. But they come to you because of the marketing. So realize you and your business need to separate. Your business will become the source of your prosperity, but you are not your business. And I know it's uncomfortable for some of you right now, but when you start to live it, man, you breathe a huge sigh of relief. Now, I said earlier that while many people believe our circumstances create our emotions, with an acceptance of responsibility, and this is a great word, and I like to hyphenate it, responsibility. When something happens, when there is a circumstance, when somebody does something to you, when something happens that is unfortunate, we have the ability to respond. Doesn't mean we prevent it from happening. We can't go back in time, but we have the ability to respond. So responsibility is a great word. So with an acceptance of responsibility, you'll understand that in great part, our emotions create our circumstances. See, we think it's the other way. We think the circumstances make us feel a certain way. What we don't realize is our emotions very often drive us to do things, say things, believe things that create those unfortunate circumstances. If we understand that at any level, then we will come to realize that gaining control over emotions in ourselves and, by the way, in others provides an immense power to change outcomes. So if you can get angry at something in your life and find clarity and inspiration and a sense of power you are more likely to bring about change. Provided you channel the anger and maintain responsibility, and you have that power. What you have to realize is you have to call upon it. I've studied psychology at many different levels, from the university level to advanced techniques and attending workshops and multiple day conferences. And when I started in college, I was very anxious to learn about psychology because I just love the idea of impacting people. I love it. And when I would go to a concert, you know, I'd often face the other way, and I was just amazed. Like, I saw Paul Simon stand in front of Central Park, I don't know how many thousands of people, just him and a guitar. And I'm just looking at the people and going, my God, he makes them feel emotions. Everyone. I mean, they're like 5,000 people back, and they're feeling sad when he's playing a sad song and happy when he's feeling a happy song. So I was always very inspired by that. And I wanted to understand, how do you influence people in a good way? How do you make people feel good? So I wanted to understand psychology. And when I started Psychology 101, University of Buffalo, I learned about Sigmund Freud and his theories. Didn't excite me in the least. I didn't understand how that was going to help me. I didn't quite understand about the sexual thing with your mother. I didn't quite get all that. I'm going, how's that going to ever help me help people feel good? And then we learned about B.F. Skinner and Pavlov's dog, and I don't know. None of that really did it for me. I liked the optical illusions. Like, on a particular page of my textbook, they had optical illusions. I kept going to that, you know, trying to, like, see the triangles or whatever. But then I found the works of somebody named William James. And William James was sort of a rebel, a revered psychologist, but a rebel because he didn't buy into the conventional theories. And William James is actually the individual who coined the term willpower. And all it is the power to access your will. Now, what is your will? Desire. So when you open your eyes in the morning, it is will that gets you to put your feet on the floor. You don't think mechanically. You don't think, okay, let me use my hamstrings now to flex at the knee joint so I can swing over. You don't do that. You just wake up and you go, I want to get out of bed. And somehow you will your feet to get onto the floor. You will it, and it happens. So when it comes to simple tasks, everybody's got the power of will. It's a question of how much you want to harness it, because it is that same power that turns somebody into a business owner, into a millionaire, into a multimillionaire. It's the same thing. It is desire, will. You've just got to learn to access the power of it. People think about willpower as if some people have it and some people don't, right? I went on a diet. Oh, yeah, how'd it work? Oh, great, I lost 30 pounds. Really? But you're looking big as a house. Oh, I gained it all back. Why? No, I didn't have any willpower. As if it's a gift that some people got at birth and other people just screwed out of it. The fact is, we all have the will. We all have the will. And we all have the power to access will. Otherwise, we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. But how much are we willing to exert that power? That's the question. And I don't want you to think of this now for your lazy patients. We'll get there. I want you to think about it for you. Because you're going to go, no, I have plenty of willpower. I work out every day, and I eat right. I do intermittent fasting. I have plenty of willpower. I want to tell you that if you're not getting what you want, if you're not getting what you deserve, if you're not feeling fulfilled and significant all the time, you are not fully accessing your power of will. Your ego will say Phil is wrong, he doesn't know you, he's full of it. That's your ego. Move it out of the way. Everyone has will. The question is, how much are we willing to access that power? So here's a directive I'm going to leave you with. We're not finished, but I want you to do this after the call. I want you to write down, and really write it down. I prefer if you write it versus, I know we use computers all the time, but there's really something that links to mindset when you physically write something. So I prefer if you write it. I want you to describe a source of anger and follow it with an outcome that would prove thrilling. I want you to describe a source of anger in your life. It doesn't have to make anybody else angry but you. And follow it with an outcome that would prove thrilling. Okay? Not an outcome that would prove nice, an outcome that would prove thrilling to you. For example, I'm really angry about the fact that I am not financially rewarded in line with the value I bring, right? That should make you angry. I mean, you're working, and if you're not being rewarded in line with the value you deliver, man, that should make you mad. That's unjust. So that would be the source of anger. And I'm picking a random example. I don't want to guide you here. You have to come up with what's going on inside you. And then part B, an outcome that would prove thrilling might be, I'll use that anger to step out of my comfort zone, create an entirely new patient base, charge differently, and earn $100,000 a month in 2016. Now, again, I'm not giving you the things you should write. I'm giving you examples. Describe a source of anger and follow it with an outcome that would prove thrilling. I'm going to go on to share with you the parts of mindset, but I want to pause and see if anybody has any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all. We covered a lot of ground. Anything. You could be mad at me, you know, share that. You could like the way this is going, share that. You could be very confused, why are we talking about this stuff? I'd like to just hear from somebody, just so I don't feel like I'm talking to myself.
I have a question about feeling needy. And when you talk to people, it's like without intentionally doing it, I think you come across as desperate.
Okay, I don't hear a question. I heard a statement.
Oh.
I have a question about feeling needy. That's a statement. So what's the question?
Well, how do you overcome that? I mean, is that just on the spectrum of frustration as well? Or is that because you don't want to feel the frustration, the anger? It just, you wrap it around a different packaging or something?
I'm going to draw a metaphor here that you'll understand. If somebody comes to you and says, I want to be well, and I have a specific question. How do I get my thyroid to work better? You're going to go, ah, man, I appreciate the question. It's a great question. And we'll get to that answer. But you got to trust that we've got a lot of things to talk about, and then that will be answered. We've got to understand what's going on in your body. We've got to do some tests. We have to really take a look at a snapshot of what's happening. And then we have to talk to you about your nutrition. We have to make some changes. And with these types of, you know, analyzing questions, I would ask you to hold on to them because they will be answered. Can you trust that for now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. You sure? There was a long hesitation there. You're okay with that?
Yeah. I just had to unmute myself.
Are you angry at me?
No.
Okay, good. Because I want you to be angry, but I don't want you to be angry at me. Channeling anger is the ability to use it to your advantage. All of you should get angry. Now, getting into mindset. We are all the same. We are all different. We are the same in that we all have brains, and our brains develop in the same ways, but we're all different in the neural pathways that we develop. We're all different in our thoughts. We're all different in what stimulates the production of certain neurotransmitters. So just as we recognize the sameness and individuality in our patients, it's important to realize we each have unique thought patterns, unique motivations, and unique internal dialogues. We all process things in our own heads differently. So with that said, we all have the same brain parts. We have the neocortex, we have what we call the limbic system, the reptilian brain, the brain stem. We all have the same parts. And we can understand how the human mind lands at decisions because the mechanisms are the same. But in order for us to use what we learn, we have to identify our individual uniqueness. You have to start to look at how your mind works, what programs you're running. And some of you will be running many of the same programs which you want to change. Some will be running many of the same programs which you want to keep. And some will find that you're the only one who's running this program. So the first part of mindset, the first player in mindset that I want to introduce is the reticular activating system. The RAS, the reticular activating system. Have you ever had an experience where you go, you know, I just have this concept in my mind. I would love to get a yellow Mustang, or just, you know, something that nobody ever sees, right? And you go, I'm going to get myself a yellow Mustang. And you, sure enough, you buy yourself a yellow Mustang. And then everywhere you go, people have a yellow Mustang. You never noticed them before. So what happened? Did everybody go buy yellow Mustangs because you did? No, you just never noticed them. You know, if there's a billboard on a highway that you pass every day for a furniture store, but you don't need any furniture, you don't notice the billboard. But if somebody breaks in your house and steals all your furniture, you better believe the next day your RAS will zoom in on that billboard. So in a sense, it is your internal GPS. And most people are controlled by their internal GPS. They don't set it. They just go with it. So imagine if you got in your car and your GPS just made up its own idea of where you should go. You'd go there. That's the RAS. And if we think of these three mind parts that I'm going to share, the RAS being one of them, as muscles, they're not really muscles, but if we think of them that way, then we can understand that they are pliable, they are changeable, but it takes effort because they get locked in. They get used to specific patterns. And if we're going to bring about change, we've got to bring about different habitual brain patterns. Your RAS is very strong. It's very confident. It thinks it's doing the right thing. Doesn't question itself. If you're on a diet and you're avoiding sugar, you have an RAS that's going to find sugar. If you convince yourself that you should not think of your couch, you will think of your couch. Your RAS is very independent, and most people follow the RAS. And it's things that happen in your life, beginning of childhood, that really shape what programs your RAS runs. And because people are following programs without thought, they lose the opportunity to get the RAS to serve them. I see people who want betterment miss opportunities every single day simply because they don't notice them. And they'll say things like, there's no opportunity. No, there's a million of them. And when I point out one thing, they go, oh, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one. I owned health clubs for many years, and I remember I had a Gold's Gym that I contracted with, and I had a radio show, and I would tell people, I go, come to Gold's Gym, because this one, it's not intimidating. I know you have this idea that it's, you know, all gorillas, but just come in there and you know, check it out. So I could always tell when people from a radio show coming in, because they'd be so tentative. They'd very slowly, like, pull open the door, and they always keep one foot out in case they have to run, you know? And they'd come in, and they'd look so ill at ease, and they'd approach the front desk slowly. So if I was there, I'd walk over and I'd go, hey, how you doing? Phil Kaplan, nice to meet you. What's going on? Oh, we heard you on the radio. Oh, good. I'm glad you're here. You interested in a membership? And they stand there like deer in headlights. I go, are you coming here because you're interested in membership? No. Why not? Because everybody here is so fit. And I go, well, who? And really, this is common. I'd say, show me. Show me who's fit. They go, he is. She is, look at him, oh, he is. And meanwhile, they're passing by 35 people with every he is and she is because their RAS is tuned to that. And I taught my staff, introduce them to someone like them because they're in the gym. Just introduce them to someone like them and suddenly it all changes. If you're at a party and you're sitting in a corner at the party where people are just doing horrible things and farting constantly, you're going to go, this is the worst party I ever went to. But that's because you're in the fart corner. Get yourself to the fun part of the party and everything changes. All you have to do is redirect where your GPS is taking you. So I hope you now understand your RAS is going to determine where you go when you go forward. And it is vitally important that if you're going to achieve as much success as you possibly can over the next 8 months and beyond, that you put the reins on that RAS, that you steer it, that you train it, just like you would train a puppy. Because it's trying to do a good job, and it is independent because you haven't thrown the reins around it before. So it's going to resist you. But the more you access it, and the more you take control of it, and the more you call upon your power of will, the more obedient it becomes. The RAS is the center of awareness and arousal. And it serves as a filter because your eyes have the access or ability to see a lot of things, but your RAS determines what gets through to the brain. The RAS decides what makes it to your conscious awareness based on what it believes to be important. So you've got to just change the importance. And if you're not telling your RAS the real true wants of your heart, it doesn't know. It has no idea. So you got to start to form some of these connections. We have power over our own will. I'm going to read you a quote from William James. We desire to feel, to have, to do all sorts of things which at the moment we don't feel, have, or do. If with the desire there goes a sense that attainment is not possible, we simply wish. If we accept the belief that the end is in our power, we will that the desired feeling, having, or doing shall be real, and real it will become. That's so powerful. You have the power. I'm just giving you the keys to turn it on. Human will is the conscious process that can lead us to that which we desire. But in order to connect with it, we've got to know what we desire. And when I ask people in these groups questions, I get general answers and I get what they don't want. And the RAS does not connect to any of that. So that's why a part of this process has to be getting really clear, creating some real outcomes that thrill you. And it's not magic. It's science. Because when you get your will and RAS aligned, you're driven there. The reticular activating system allows us to notice things relative to those issues that are important at a given point in time. Well, don't let your RAS decide what's important. You decide. And if we apply conscious will to directing the RAS, then the path to achievement begins to unfold and it almost feels effortless. Now, I want you to identify two words in your language and in the language of your patients that are shutdown words. And I want you to recognize them when they show up. And I don't mean when people say them to you. I mean when your head says them to you. Let your RAS start catching but and can't. They are there in your internal vocabulary. You may think they're not, but they are. And I just want you to notice. I'm asking your RAS to notice when you have but thoughts. I don't mean with two T's. I mean with one T. When you have but thoughts and when you have can't thoughts. Right? So when I just read you that quote by William James, it aligns with if we believe we can achieve it, we can. So as soon as somebody accepts the can't, the I can't, it shuts out possibility of achievement. And I want you to just start to notice how often that shows up. But is a lot more subtle, because but is really can't. It's just in disguise. I would love to sign up for your program, but I'm going to be traveling for the next 3 months. That means I'm not. It means I can't. Right? So, but is kind of a subtle way of saying I can't do it. So I'm not asking you now to notice it in other people, although you will. I want you to notice it in your self-talk. And what I would ask you to do is keep a notebook or a journal. I know some of you probably do this now, but keep one near the bed and just jot down when you notice your thoughts. What is it that you told yourself you can't do? Even if you don't believe it, you're going to go, I don't really believe it. I just had the thought. Okay, but your RAS doesn't know that. If you're having the thought, your RAS is receiving it. So start to identify it, and I think most of you will be very surprised. So start to identify those words. Now, I said there are three parts of mindset. One is the RAS. I'm going to introduce you briefly to the other two, and then we're going to wrap it up for today. But I'm promising you I laid the groundwork, and we're going to go through some exciting things as we move forward. The second part of mindset I want you to understand is the EEM, Emotional Experiential Memory, the EEM. The EEM has one purpose. It protects you. That's it. That's the only thing it does. It doesn't think, it doesn't have a sense of humor, it doesn't analyze, it simply protects you. It is the great protector. Emotional experiential memory. Now, your EEM, when you're born, doesn't know what to protect you from. It learns. That's why it's experiential. So it learns what's bad. So at some point in your childhood, you looked at the stove and you thought, oh, pretty. And you go, let me touch that. Ah, you burned your hand. You cried. You never did that again. Never did it again because your EEM stored that. It said, okay, touching stove causes pain. Do not touch stove. And it stores it. So it sounds like the EM would be a really good thing, and it is, right? Otherwise, you'd go, oh, high building. Let me jump off it. And the EM would just say, all right, go ahead. But the EM goes, no, no, no. Pain. So the EM keeps you away from pain. So let's just say that somebody decides they're part of a larger practice and they want to go out on their own. I'm going to start my own business. And they start their own business, and they wind up with a rent that they can't afford, and then it turns out there's a roof leak, and they have major problems, and one of their employees starts to steal some patients, and they go, oh, man, I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to do this again. They go back to become an employee. And then 2 years later, when they're miserable, they go, I think I should start a business. And the EM says, nope, starting business equals pain. So unless they're willing to change that, they're never going to start a business again. If you've ever been in a relationship where you've given yourself totally and you've stripped your heart bare and you got screwed over and hurt and heartbroken, it's hard for you to give yourself that way again because the EM goes, no, no, when you give your heart like that, that's pain. So we have to understand the EM is there to keep us alive, but if we let it rule, we'll never do anything. So thankfully, we have the third part of mindset. And that is the PFC, the prefrontal cortex. The PFC is the only place in the human brain where you create possibility. It is where imagination lives. So if you do not have an active PFC, you get stuck in patterns. There have been some really interesting studies and some human studies. And what they found is they took people who had worked for the same company for at least 8 years and worked in a cubicle. They had almost no electrical activity in the prefrontal cortex. Then they looked at skydivers and mountain climbers, and it was electric, like lighting up like crazy. So if you think of that part of the brain mind as a muscle, then can we turn the cubicle worker into a skydiver? I don't know, but we can certainly make a change. So the PFC has a tug of war going on with the EEM, because the PFC is where possibility is created. So you go, oh, I'd really like to have a practice that makes $80,000 a month. And the EM goes, no, no, it's too much work. That's the tug of war. But it'll be so worth it. Yeah, but it's so much work. That's a healthy tug of war because it allows you to make good decisions. But the problem is many people let the EEM rule. And they accept it. The EM goes, no, no, no. Maybe they could do it, but you can't because you live in a different community. No, people aren't willing to pay that here. That's the EEM. It's trying to protect you from risk. It's the PFC that's going to determine where you're going to go, if you're really going to get in touch with your wants. If you're going to let it from your heart into your mind, it's going to the prefrontal cortex. You go, here's what I really want. And when you start to light up that prefrontal cortex and tune in your RAS, man, you're headed there. There is no stopping you. So I want you to start to identify the EEM thoughts. Yeah, I'd like to, but that's EEM. It's going, don't take that risk. Hey, maybe I should ask her out. Nah, you'll probably be embarrassed. Okay. This looks like an adventure. I think I'll go on this adventure. No, you can get hurt. You've got to strengthen that prefrontal cortex if you're not living your dream right now. So let me review a few quick things, and then we'll wrap it up for today, and I would ask you to follow through on the few directives I've given you. One is to get in touch with your anger. I want you to be angry. I don't want you to stay in anger, but I want you to get mad about something so you're frustrated enough to feel like you must make a change. I'm asking you to keep some kind of journal where you just notice your own self-dialogue, and you notice how many times the words but and can't come up. I want you to start to notice when your RAS pulls you in a direction. I'll give you an exercise. It's kind of fun. Just say to somebody, do it today. Say to somebody, you know what I haven't seen in a while? And then just say it. It has to be really something you haven't seen in a while. You know what I haven't seen in a while? A Cleveland Browns jersey. You know what I haven't seen in a while? An old woman walking with an umbrella. You know what I haven't seen in a while? A convertible going in reverse. It's got to be something that really may exist. Okay, you know what I haven't seen in a while? A yellow and orange frog that's the size of a skyscraper. You know, I can't come up with that because it's not likely to happen. But this is just an RAS exercise. Just make the statement verbally. Say it to somebody. You know what I haven't seen in a while? Just say something that you really haven't seen in a while. I will bet most of you before the next call, you see it. And it's not because it wasn't there. It's because you didn't notice. So that's the RAS. I want you to notice where your RAS is leading you. Down the road, I'm going to talk about the monsters that prevent you from achieving. But in order to fight those monsters, you've got to have control over the RAS. I want you to start to identify some of your unique traits, and I want you to start to really think about what you deserve. I will send you a list of those directives I just shared with you. Any thoughts, comments, questions? I really hope there is at least one or two. Any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all?
This is Alyssa.
Alyssa, this is three or four times. You're a vocal person. I like that.
Well, yeah.
What do you got?
I guess I am.
Okay, what do you got to vocalize?
That's one of my unique traits. I've thoroughly enjoyed this call, and thank you for what you do and your time and commitment to having us be powerful, fulfilled people.
I appreciate that. And here's what I'm going to ask you. Hold on to the thank you till the end. I'll accept it gladly. But you have no idea what you will achieve in the next 8 months, and I want you to experience that. And then thank me. Okay?
Will do.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay, let me get one more. One more thought, comment from the peanut gallery. Anybody. Even if it's just a word or four words. You've got to do a minimum of four words.
Yeah, this is Rick. And listen, I really appreciate, just to kind of segue what she just said, I really appreciate this opportunity because, I'm really seeing the value of having a coach, somebody from the external to really kind of help me take that next step. So I really appreciate your time with us.
Rick, I feel like I know you the best of everyone in the group so far. I do.
Well,
I mean,
I've
heard other people speak, but I feel like I know you the best.
Right,
and you are a project for me, and I like that. So let me ask you this. Can you name one thing in particular on the call today that impacted you?
Yes. My vagueness. And I've said it before, but you solidified it for me, that if I don't know what exactly I want and where I want to go, there's no way I can get there. And my lack of specificity is, one of the things that I definitely need to work on and clean up and clear up.
Right. Very good. I'm glad you identified that and acknowledged it. Thank you. Anyone else just want to say hi? I mean, we have a really good group here, 15 people. I think I heard from four, maybe five. Anybody else just want to say hi? No, you got to give me four words. And it can't be the same word twice.
Okay. This is Sandy.
Hello, Sandy.
When it comes to figuring out your uniqueness, how many traits do you think we should, at a minimum, write down?
You're going to struggle to find one, and when you find one, you'll find two, and when you find two, you're going to just see as you start to uncover them. And I'll tell you a really good thing to do. And I know it sounds a little weird, but ask people. Just ask like a patient who you would never normally ask this to. Go, I'm part of a workshop right now, and I'm having a hard time because there's an exercise where we have to talk about what makes us unique. Can you give me something that kind of, attracted you to me that's unique? And you'll be surprised. And sometimes they'll tell you things, and you go, really? And then you'll think about it, and you go, yeah, I do that. Also, when I talk about your uniqueness, it can be past experiences. So, for example, a functional medicine doctor with a thyroid problem has a unique advantage. Do you understand that?
Yes.
A doctor who lost his parents to cancer, that's a unique advantage. Now, we don't think of it as advantage in the time, so I'm not saying advantage is something we celebrate. But in terms of your profession, nobody else has your history. And sometimes when you look back, you go, yeah, that makes me unique. Think about this. I became a chiropractor. I left my field, went to work as a neurophysiologist in a different field, and came back. That's a unique thing. Wouldn't that be unique for somebody, Sandy?
Yes, it would.
Good. So that's the way I want you to start to think. And you, again, it's going to be hard to think of that first one because you're just noticing the same things about you as everyone else. And then you're going to write something, you're going to cross it out. You're going to go, well, no, not that. But this is an exercise that really leads to some really impressive breakthroughs, and you're going to be shocked how it plays into your marketing and your influence ability. So before I teach you those things, we've got to uncover some unique traits so you will find them. Okay? All right, I'll leave it at that. So we're going to meet here pretty much every 2 weeks. I think there's a few months where there are five Thursdays. So it's twice a month, and you should all have the schedule. Originally, I did have a wrong date in there. I think I had December 3rd, and it was actually the 5th, so we should have sent you a corrected one. But it's always Thursday, 1:15 Eastern time. And within the next week, you're going to receive an invitation to our email discussion group. And that becomes a really great asset here because you guys are just getting to know each other. And again, there are, you know, maybe five of you who've been vocal today. There are 10 hiding in the background. We want to get to know everybody. So the discussion board allows you to send an email to anyone in the group, and we all get to see it. So the great thing about that is, as we move forward, you will all become each other's coaches. So somebody will have a question, you put it out to the group, and you're going to get a response, and everybody else witnesses that. So as soon as you receive that invitation, please accept it and just post a hello, I'm in. And until we speak again, I'm going to wrap it up with the words I wrap up every Be Better call with. There are two words, and I want you to hold on tight to them, because they really underlie all of our desire and will. I'm going to leave you with these words. Be better. Bye-bye, everybody.